We're settled in and ready to go on Thursday morning. Keith Klein and Sue Wanzer both serve on the MCCSC school board. Keith serves as president, and we welcome Sue in. Sue, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm almost a little chilly. I'm not complaining. I love the weather.
Yeah.
So this is great.
We don't have to talk about heat index or humidity or please be safe outside. We make sure you have a jacket this morning. That's what our advice for you is.
Right.
And that's much better to talk about in August. No question about it. We are, let's see, one, two, three. You should be having a school board meeting then next Tuesday as the final Tuesday of the month of August. Tell us what we should be expecting to see next week, because obviously we're getting close to budget time. We've talked to Tim Thrasher here in the last couple of weeks. What else do we need to look forward to for next Tuesday?
Well, on Tuesday, Tim will ask the board for authorization to advertise our budget, and then that's the first step in our whole budget review and budget adoption process. So once the board gives that authorization, the budget for what he is proposing will then be advertised, and then in September at our board meeting we'll have a public hearing where people can make comments on that budget, and then in October we'll again talk about the budget and then hopefully adopt it.
And for people that might not be as familiar with the process as you and Keith and myself, what does advertising the budget exactly mean? What is the legal ramification behind all of that?
Well, I can mention something, Sue, on that one of the things is we'll tend to be a little bit over on the advertising, because when you advertise it, you can't add to it after you've advertised. So we tend to be a little bit on the high side on the advertising. The budget usually then comes in lower than what was advertised.
Well, and that's correct, Keith, and Glass, also to answer your question, it means that the budget will go out there formally for everyone to review, and the public can take a look at all of that.
And you can't sneak something in at the last minute or do this or do that. It has to be what is going to be voted on or looked at, correct?
Exactly. And as Keith said, it's advertised a little bit higher. You know, luckily we have somebody like Tim Thrasher, because a lot of these things are estimates in terms of the kind of revenue that's going to come to us from the state. You want to kind of be conservative in that. You don't want to say we're going to get all this money and then we don't get the money. So it's all based on, at least for our funds that are funded with property taxes, it's based on assessed valuation of property. And then the money from the state that we get that funds our general education fund, which used to be property taxes and now is state sales tax, again, we don't know exactly what that will be per student. So, again, that's an estimate that we have to work with. And that's why we rely so much on Tim and his knowledge and his experience to figure out some of these variables.
And briefly, let me interject here. The HT is reporting via Twitter, according to the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, Indiana 46 west of Ellettsville is now closed while vehicles are being towed. There was a severe accident out there early this morning. So people in RBB, if buses are late or not on time, that's why. This was the 8400 somewhere out in County Road, 8400. Mm-hmm. So it's out in that direction. So that's kind of backing things up in Monroe County this morning as well. So I just wanted to put that up there as the Herald Times says it should be clear soon, but you never know with towing things and moving things and accident scenes how quickly that happens. So if there's some delays in the RBB this morning, now we know why, for some transportation issues because of that accident out there. Sue Wanzer and Keith Klein are our guests this morning. They both serve on the MCCSC school board. There is an interesting article in yesterday's paper. State tells MCCSC to spend more money on early intervention. Order comes after too many black students identified with cognitive disabilities. What do we know about all of that? And obviously that article in the paper, and now your budget, as we're talking about budgets, the MCC is now required to spend 15% of fiscal year 2016 funds it receives as part of the Federal Individuals with Disability in Education Act and what is termed Coordinated Early Intervening Services. It's a lot of words in there.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of words to a whole lot of this that I'm going to claim ignorance. I don't have a lot of information. I am kind of confused, I think, like a lot of people are. I don't know what the term disproportionate, I black students identified with cognitive disabilities. Now, I don't know how that necessarily is reported, how that's figured out. The question is, of course we have these kids who might have some kind of impairment and we're going to serve them, but the fact that somebody says that it's disproportionate, I guess I really don't know what that means. I mean, I know what it means, but I don't know what the implication of all this is. You know, we're serving all kids. We're trying to identify all of these things, and we do have what was given to the state, a two-year plan for early intervention. And my understanding, Glass, is that this classification of kid, we're trying to address early to give them some support so that later on they won't need special education services. So a lot of the details I'm not really clear on. I'm sorry, but, I don't want to talk about something that I just necessarily don't know about and that I'm confused about like a lot of people. But I do know we have a pretty coordinated and comprehensive plan that was sent to the Department of Education the beginning of August to respond to this citation from the state.
And Kathleen Hugo is answering some of these questions in the Herald Times article from the other day, and it seems like it's not clear on how it's calculated, and it's not clear on how it is measured. And we'll look for a follow-up on that a little bit down the road. It's a numbers game, and if you fit into those numbers, but it's the angle would be the MCCSE is doing plenty to help those with.
Well, and we're looking for more information from the DOE on what exactly this all means, because as Kathleen Hugo mentioned in the article, there are a number of schools that are in a similar situation, and they have not received letters, and we're trying to find out what it is about our program that makes it different than what's going on in other places. As Sue has told us, we do as good a job as we think we can do, but obviously the DOE doesn't agree with something, and we're seeking clarification on that.
Keith Klein, go ahead, Sue.
The other thing that struck me about the article was that Dr. Hugo mentioned that African-American kids are identified much more with disabilities. We have more black kids identified with disabilities, and that's not just true here, but nationwide. And the Department of Education, the State Department of Education, denied that, and they said, no, that's not true. So we've got some conflicting information here. And we know, because we've talked about poverty and socioeconomic status, we know that there's a lot of things that go on, especially kids in need, kids in poverty, that can create some of these things that are identified as cognitive disability issues. It could be the environment. It could be the home. Lead-based paint, lack of nutrition, lack of food. So there's a whole lot of things that go into this. And I guess one thing I'm trying to clarify is that it's not something that we did that caused this disparity, but we certainly are responding and providing the support services that all kids need to succeed.
Kristen Severs Coffer, special education specialist with the State Department of Education, said, "It's not something that happens all that much." Kathleen Hugo, the director of special education at MCCSE, disagreed, saying, "That wasn't my understanding." So we'll try to figure this out and see what can happen. Except you know that the grant money must be spent in a 27-month cycle starting July 1, 2015, running through September 30, 2017. And that's to help address that problem. So we'll see what's going on there. 819 at WGCL. Keith Klein and Sue Wanser both sit on the MCCSE school board. What else do we need to know? Obviously, it's budget time. School is in session, Keith.
Well, the big thing that the kind of the elephant in the room is the word referendum. We'll have some discussion at our meeting on Tuesday. We either have to make a decision, Sue, Tuesday or by the September meeting on whether or not we're going to do a referendum in May or November. And that's the big elephant that's right out there now. People keep asking me, is there going to be I'm only one member of the school board. If I had to guess, I don't see any way we can continue providing the level of education we're providing in this community without a referendum. But I'm only one member of the school board.
Well, and then I'm two member of the school board, and I would agree with you. When we look at the cuts that we faced and what was looming before the referendum and then what we were able to replace and what we were able to hang on to as a result of the referendum. And for me, the beauty of this is we're not asking for extra money. We're just asking for a continuation of what people have already been paying.
Well, and let me point out something there, Sue. A continuation also because of increased property tax values, perhaps even less than we've been
using.
Well,
exactly. Exactly. The tax levy will probably be less. People won't have to be paying as much, and we'll still garner as much the money that we need. So,
right. At this point, the only decision is it going to be in May or is it going to be in November? And there's a lot of reasons for both.
Right. And going back to the need for the referendum, I would remind people, too, that when we were funding our school corporations with local property taxes, people were paying more. Now it's being funded through sales taxes. So even with the referendum, even with the continuation of the referendum, people are still paying less in property taxes for the schools than what they had been a number of years ago before the change was made to sales taxes.
And Sue,
and you're right, Keith. Go ahead.
No, you're good, because when the referendum process moving forward, what's going to determine, in your opinion, whether it goes in May or November? Is there a deciding factor
let's talk about some of the things that are involved. First of all, May notoriously is a low voter turnout. November.
Let me stop you right there. Monroe County is a notoriously voter.
Well, but that's what we're talking about.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's 22% or 19%.
The other situation is in November you have presidential kind of thing going on, and the issue there is we're at the bottom of the ballot. How do you get people to go all the way down instead of just voting for one candidate and leaving?
That's my point. So what's going to be that? Is there a determining factor which is going to push it in one direction or another?
Well, I think for me, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm biased in this. I have a side in this. I have a stake in this. I want the referendum to pass. So I'm looking at it from which election does it have a greater chance of passage. And right now, from what I've learned from people, from what I've heard, from what I believe, it looks like November would be a better chance because it would be a greater voter turnout. Now, when Springsteen was here and did the survey for us to find out the issues that people are interested in the school.
Springsteen was here?
Springsteen.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought the boss was playing.
I might have said Springsteen.
You did. No, you didn't.
Yeah, they said, you know, we had a good shot at a primary election in May or November. So that's out there. And I will say, this is my own bias that I have to get over, maybe. We passed it successfully in November. So I'm thinking, why not stay with the November when it was successful? Going into May would be a different situation for us. However, a number of school corporations around the state have successfully passed general referenda during the primary election.
Sue, let me jump in, because there's one correction we need to make, and that is the HT had a story that said if you have it in May and it fails, you just do it in November. No,
right.
No, that is not true. You have to wait a year to do it. So it's not if it fails in May.
Whose rules are those?
That's state rules.
Okay, and that's why I want you to clear that up. So people understand it. So it's not as simple as saying,
fail in May, come back
in
November.
Do it again.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
In fact, I had a member of a school board from Brown County said they're kind of talking about it in Brown County, and that came up, and they said, but it didn't make any difference because if it fails in May, they can do it. And we had to correct them. No, that is not true. The HT
is
wrong.
Why is that a common thought?
Well, because it seems logical. You know, what's the problem with doing it again if you fail in May? Do it in November.
Try
but
again.
The state says, no, you can't do that.
Interesting.
You have to wait a year.
And that might have been part of the new legislation governing
it
referenda. I think it was at one time. You didn't have to wait for a year, but there's new regulations governing.
Yeah, I find that this is really disturbing, Sue, because the state has essentially forced school systems to do referendums, get the funding they need, and then after they see that in some cases it's working, then they come around and say, well, let us layer a whole bunch of rules on how you do all of this to make it even more difficult. So I'm baffled by that. If you're not going to give us the money, then don't layer all the rules on what you have to do.
And it's not just for your school. school system.
No, it's
for
statewide.
All of them.
That's right.
And I think they want to make sure that people aren't doing it with smoke and mirrors, and people aren't wrangling it just for a small term. You have to. Yeah, you should be able.
No, they never use smoke and mirrors in their legislative stuff.
That's do as I do, not as I
that's
say,
right.
Or whatever. However,
sorry.
That thing works. Works out at all. All right, so meeting is next Tuesday?
Tuesday night. There'll be a 6 o'clock start, public testimony or whatever they, you know, public can speak at the beginning of the meeting, public comments, and then we're into the full meeting.
Anything else we need to touch on this morning, folks?
Those are the big ones.
If I could just do one little personal
yes.
thing. Today is Culture Fest at IU. And in the auditorium at 4:30 is my nephew, Kevin Wanzer, who is the keynote speaker for Culture Fest. He's been here before at IU. The students love him. Go see him if you can. He is one of the funniest people I know, so it should be a great time.
Excellent, and there's plenty of stuff going on throughout the week and weekend with Indiana University as well. Sue, great job as always. We'll get caught up with you next Thursday, get a recap of what happened at the meeting, see where we are in the budget and referendum process, and we'll check
okey-doke.
In with you
that
then.
That sounds good.
All right.
Okey-doke. Thank you.